Blog Talk Radio.
And everybody should know that's how love goes. It's good for the soul.
Oh, I got a long way to go, but it won't stop the pain. No, no. That's the kind of thing that keeps me coming back again and again.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to the Healthy Soul Talk Show with your girl, your favorite therapist, Dr. Kimberly Thomas. Excuse the delay. It's coming in. I was a little thrown off. I like my intro music. That's all I can say, okay? So come on in. Join us. You're listening to the Healthy Soul Talk Show with Dr. Thomas, brought to you, supported by Healthy Soul Talk, LLC, which is a full-service counseling agency where we focus on mental health, urban trauma, substance use disorder, as well as outpatient mental health for individual counseling, families and couples, and domestic violence for aggressors. All right, so we do the whole spectrum of mental health over there. And so we're always in the community doing things. And so we have some events coming up. We have Let's Talk About It, Suicide, Painting a Picture of Hope, partnering with New Heaven Christian Church, located on the west side, where we're joining in and talking about suicide on a Sunday. So, you know, some people are like, why a Sunday? Well, we found that if you're at church and most people coming to church are sick, why not get you while you're at the hospital? So we're talking about it, and Pastor Charles Brown, my partner in crime, has graciously opened his doors to us, and we're partnering together just to bring services to the community, awareness. And so this is the second event we've done. We focused on Narcan and some other topics, and we did a vision board party not too long ago, which was a great success, and just, you know, making it an overall experience for people to come in and get hope, right? We don't proclaim to be their hope, but we just want to set the atmosphere that you can have a vision for 2020, all right? So look for that to come. Also, Healthy Soul Talk has a private women's book club, where we just started our first book, Walking in My Father's Shoes. And so definitely, if you want to join us, follow us at Healthy Soul Talk, and then you'll see the group there. You can request to join. Like I said, we just started our first book. So we actually have one more book copy book to give out. You know, we said the first five ladies to join, and so we have one more copy to you know, send to someone. So definitely we want to make sure we uphold that. Again, if you want to join that private book club for women's inspirational book club with Healthy Soul Talk, you can find that link on our page, and also recognizing that we're going to do this for the entire year. So welcome. Thank you for coming on in, Danielle and Jetty. We're going to have a great topic this evening, so if you go ahead and share it. We just let people come on in. We know some people are reading the title, right? And you know, they don't want folks to know that they you know, listening in on this subject matter part two, right? Because last week we talked about the lack of desire. This week we're about to go in on the what happens when you have too much desire. All right, so you know, we like open discussion. So whatever questions you have, you can feel free to email takingthelimitsoff@comcast.net to remain anonymous, or you can post right there. Ain't no shame in it for me. As you can see, we in 2020 pretty hard. Full conversation. Welcome, Anita. And so, you know, nothing is left out when we're talking about mental health this year. All right. So let me go ahead and check in with my favorite producer, because today we got to resume eating chicken. Huh? Right?
I haven't had any yet.
Okay,
then.
Well, I did.
No.
So there we go. Tell you what, did you engage in eating chicken today? So, you know, just let me know.
I'll take time to eat.
Okay, then. Well, I'll wait for y'all.
No, you didn't wait. You went. You can't wait. You done went already. I see fried chicken crumbs.
No, see, that's no fried. Now, we going to stick with being okay with the baked and the broad and the you know, chicken noodle soup, right? We going to stick with healthy chicken, mm-hmm. right? No fried foods. Cause what's the restriction for February?
It's coming out in the morning.
It's coming out in the morning. All right, so I'll be patient.
Yeah, coming out in the morning.
I'll be patient.
What am I hearing?
All right, so let's get it going. Welcome, everyone. We're just getting started, and as you know, when we tune in, we always go in with some facts here. And so, you know, this first fact, right, you know, I found it interesting because I've never seen a push like this before where it talks about fake smiles.
Fake smiles.
Fake smiles. It says that fake smiles can hurt you. And it says here that it turns out that faking happiness can hurt your health. A study from 2011 published by the Academy of Management Journal, researchers looked at the behavior of bus drivers, a profession where they're required to have many friendly interactions throughout the day, and discovered that these people withdrew from their work while putting on a smile for a show, and that this had long-term effects on their health, right? And I thought about that, you know, how many of us, you know, we are in professions where we literally have to put on a fake smile, right? Not necessarily, you know, it looked like you're enjoying it or being content, but you actually have to smile and give the impression, right, that you are happy. And I can only imagine the you know, struggle within to act happy when you're really unhappy where you are. Have you ever done that before?
I was about to say, I didn't want to be rude, but I almost do it every day.
Really? The kids bring a smile to your face.
Kids.
Come on now.
It ain't the kids. It's the adult.
It's the adult?
I have to fake a smile around.
Why do you have to put on a fake smile around them?
I'm allergic to stupid.
Right, but do you have to fake smile?
Yeah, because you have to smile and just be like, oh.
Really?
Like you really thought that was a good idea?
You mean like say what you really feel?
Yes, you just smile.
So you can't walk around just with a straight face, like no affect. Do you think that would be labeled as unapproachable?
Unapproachable.
Right.
Unapproachable. Not a team player.
Not a team player.
That's normal for me, but yeah.
You're a rebel?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Especially and with several causes.
Wow.
Yes. I straight ahead go. I don't have time for foolery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I say this. I don't. I've never been in a situation where or a job mm-hmm. where I had to like literally fake smile throughout the interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that's a whole. When I read this, I was like, that's a whole nother level to where you have to consciously, right, portray happiness, to be successful or productive.
Since you've been doing counseling, have you always done that working for yourself, or have you worked for, have you had other employers or in other, like, has this been your only profession?
Yes, it's been my only profession.
And have you worked for anyone else?
I was with someone before.
Okay.
Right. And two major places.
Okay, and you didn't have to face
it. It wasn't an atmosphere where they said, you know, when you have customers, you mm-hmm. must have this friendly, inviting mm-hmm. face all the time, mm-hmm. right? And maybe because I like those jobs, right? I think it's different too when you have so many obstacles on a job.
Mm-hmm.
How do you smile when you don't want to be there, but then you're required to, or else mm-hmm. it's disciplinary action?
Yeah, I in the corporate world, I had to do it there too.
Okay.
You know, you have to learn to play the game.
Right.
Yeah, you have to learn
right.
to play the game.
Right.
Because you don't want to be labeled as someone who's not trying or someone who's not interested.
Right.
You just sit there and you just, mm-hmm. you know. Until now, if someone asks you a question, that's a different story.
Right, right. I agree. All right. So the next one here, okay? The next one here, you ready for this?
No. Oh, no. I get the feeling this is not going to go well, but go ahead.
It says here, high heels were first designed for men. High heels were first designed for men. It says, so closely identified as a female fashion staple today, high heels were first designed for men at the end of the 16th century, right? Persian-inspired style was all the rage in Europe, according to J. Paul Getty Museum. And heels were seen as being, right, masculine and a great way to boost your height a few inches. And then, of course, they have the picture here going back that far with men in, you know, shoes with, you know, some inches.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Anybody out there? Anybody listening?
Bueller. I ain't going. I know that that's how they used to dress back in the. I actually remember reading.
Okay.
I actually kind of knew this.
Okay.
You said 16th century. I was going back to 10th.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you look at.
The George Washington and all those guys wore. The shoes they made were all wooden, first of all. So.
Okay.
They had, like, it was a wooden shoe. The entire bottom was like a leather piece or anything. But yeah, I'm not surprised. Now. Yeah.
It got me to thinking, right? Because we have a topic tonight.
Oh God.
Right, where we're talking about paraphilia, right? And so we're talking about paraphilic disorders, which
mm-hmm.
we know there's mm-hmm. something to that, and you know. I actually want to have this open conversation because many people, depending on your culture and your belief system,
mm-hmm.
think that it's something wrong, right? Well, what sexually entices us. And so, you know, I didn't want to talk about this topic to say, hey, here are some disorders that's running rampant, right, in our world. But they do exist. Hey, Shiante, how are you? They do exist,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to say that there's a difference between those tendencies versus full disorders, right?
Okay.
Because I think the distinguishment will let us know, hey, you know, this is getting out of hand versus, you know, some people are just interested in, right, these
mm-hmm.
type of sexual arousals, okay? And so are you ready to...
I'm ready to push buttons.
Dive right in. You already know that.
Yeah, I'm
you know you
I
you
told
are.
You last week to bring you some help. Those are my exact words. I asked you specifically, where are your people?
You are my people.
No, I just work here.
You are my
no,
people. Okay.
No. What time yet? She said she was gone.
She's listening.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, here we go. Let's kick it off. So, paraphilia. All right, paraphilia, okay? There are different types of paraphilia. And so there's another term, fetishes, that go along with this. But we're going to talk about defining these terms. So as we get into the disorders, this is where tendency versus disorders are distinguished, okay? So paraphilias involve sexual arousals to atypical objects, situations, and or targets such as corpses, animals, and children, all right? However, some sexual activities that seem unusual to another person or a healthcare practitioner do not constitute a paraphilic disorder simply because they are unusual, okay? People may have paraphilic interests but do not meet the criteria for a paraphilic disorder, all right? So understanding that paraphilic disorders are recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, urges, or behaviors that are distressing or disabling and that involve inanimate objects, children or non-consenting adults, or suffering the humiliation of oneself with a partner or the potential to cause harm. All right. So the key words we want to keep in mind here is that with a disorder, it interrupts your life, right? So when we talk about intense, recurrent sexual arousing fantasies, urges, we're talking this is wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Wherever you go, you are, for all practical purposes, giving attention to those recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, urges, and behaviors that are distressing or disabling. Right, and they involve objects, they involve people, they involve non-consenting adults, which in turn suffering a humiliation of yourself or the partner with the potential to cause harm. Mm-hmm. All right, so are we there? Right, so thinking about that, we are sexual beings.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
I said,
okay,
mm-hmm.
don't tune out on me now.
I told you, I left 10 minutes ago. Just my body here.
I'm going to talk to Shiante. Shiante, do you believe that we are sexual beings?
Oh, Lord.
Right, that we are naturally, you know, aroused by certain things, right, because God has instilled those desires in us. Of course, that is a you know, a way of order he has, but we are sexual beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have some paraphilias, which is, you know, attractions to non-traditional, atypical objects or people, even to the extent when we talk about fetishes, right? Fetishes are those sexual or intense arousals or fantasies or urges towards non-living things, right? These are objects only.
Mm-hmm.
And these include body parts that we're not typically sexually aroused by. Right?
Okay.
So those are fetishes. Fetishes can be on a body that we would say, well, how does that turn somebody on? Right? That particular body part. Or an actual object. Okay? Mm-hmm. Such as shoes, such as, you know, some other type of clothing article. Intense arousal. Right? We're talking about that intense sexual arousal. All right? So you with me? So let's get into talking about some of these paraphilic disorders. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one we have here is exhibitionism.
Okay.
All right. And so this involves exposing the genitals to become sexually excited or having a strong desire to be observed by other people during sexual activity.
Wow.
Exhibitionistic disorder involves acting on those exhibitionistic urges or fantasies or being distressed by or unable to function because of those urges or fantasies.
Okay.
Got it? So mm-hmm. so this is where it says here there Shiante says just freaky. Shiante, okay? These are real urges and people that are struggling with such urges and fantasies.
Okay.
Now, when you think of fantasy, what is a fantasy to you, Dr. King?
I used to watch the show Fantasy Island. The plane. That's a fantasy to me.
You are so not getting off that easy, right? I mean, do you so listen? Do you think it's natural to fantasize? Do you think it's healthy to fantasize about sexual encounters?
Do I think it's normal?
Yeah. Do you think it's normal? Do you think it's a part of human nature?
I would say it is a part of being human. Yes.
All right. Good. All right.
Yeah. So
when you think about exhibitionism. Mm-hmm. All right, it's a form of paraphernalia because usually males, right, expose their genitals to typically unsuspecting strangers or become sexually excited when doing so. All right, and so they may be aware of their need to surprise, shock, or impress the unwilling observer.
Mm-hmm.
And the victim is almost always a woman or a child of either sex. Right, and it says actual sexual contact is almost never sought, so the exhibitionist rarely commits rape. Okay, and it says these tendencies usually start during adolescence, and it says most exhibitionists are married, but the marriage is often troubled.
Okay.
All right. About 30% of male sex offenders who are arrested are exhibitionists, and they tend to persist in their behavior, and about 20% to 50% are rearrested. So we know that exposure of genitals to unsuspecting strangers for sexual excitement is rare among women. We know that it still is illegal to do that. Got it? All right? So when is it a disorder, right? Because you have some people who may not feel like something's wrong, right? So disorder kicks in when, you know, you have the person who says that they feel greatly distressed or become less able to function well,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
Such as at work, at home, or in interactions with friends, or they have acted on their urges with a person who does not consent. So it really gets to where this consumes your life in a way that you can't even take care of your day-to-day functioning, right? Life is interrupted because you are all fulfilling, right, this need to expose your genitals.
And what is this one called? What disorder is this again?
Exhibitionistic.
Oh, exhibitionistic?
Right.
So exhibitionism.
Correct,
same
right.
Thing?
Exhibitionism
okay.
is kind of like the active form of it.
Okay.
Right. That's a paraphilia.
Got it.
The disorder is when you acknowledge that it's disrupting your life and it is now a problem.
Got it.
Right. So most people get caught by law, right, still may not look at it as they have a problem.
Got it.
Okay.
With you. Got it.
All right. You ready for the next one?
Not really, but I'm kind of stuck here. So.
Here we go.
I could go do the show from the other room.
No, you're going to stay right.
Okay, go ahead.
Right here. Here we go. Voyeuristic disorder.
Voyeuristic disorder.
Voyeuristic or voyeurism.
Voyeurism.
Voyeurism. That is the paraphilia.
Got it.
Got it?
Got it.
It is a form of paraphilia. Is the achievement of sexual arousal by observing people who are naked, disrobing, or engaging in sexual activity. When observation is of unsuspecting people, this sexual behavior often leads to problems with the law in relationships.
Hmm.
All right? Voyeuristic disorder involves acting on voyeuristic urges or fantasies with a non-consenting person or experiencing significant distress or functional impairment because of such urges and impulses.
Uh-huh.
So these are our people who, so listen, it's like, and this is like dialogue, right? So what do you think about people who, like, we call them peeping Toms, right? We call them, like, you know, people who like to look at people getting naked or people, you know, already naked or engaging in sexual. They like, now this is not necessarily looking at porn,
mm-hmm.
right? This is actually the gratification comes when it's supposed to be a private, you know, thing between two people,
mm-hmm.
and you're watching. So you're getting that gratification of them not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So is that like a, is something wrong with a person because they like looking at people?
You the doctor, is it? Hey,
let's go.
No, don't tell my shit. My doctorate covers things that are holy.
And
righteous in his
eyes. No.
What about Sasa? Yeah, huh? So my doctor covered. Them papers I wrote.
Oh, God.
This didn't come up.
Hey, she asked that question, do these disorders fall into a mental, you know, that's, I'm trying to get Dr. King to come on in here with the spiritual aspect, but he didn't left me all out on the ocean by myself talking about these fantasies and urges here.
You brought this back stuff in here.
Really?
See? You see her question?
I did.
Right.
So you know, I mean, listen, because it's like, is something wrong with you because you like looking at other people getting naked and they don't know you looking at them?
I don't know if it's something. I guess it all, if we're talking strictly from, I'm going to try to keep it from the spiritual side.
Okay.
Answer the question without that. I honestly believe that if people get an enjoyment out of it, then so be it. I think the problem comes when it takes over your life. Matter of fact, I just saw a video of Lamar Odom, who's now, I guess, saved and all that good stuff. And Lamar said that he would be late for the team bus because he felt like he had to watch one more scene of something on television. Now, on his hotel room, whatever. Now, that was porn or on his computer or whatever.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But that is, I know you said there was a, there is a delineation between.
Right. That's another type of.
That's another type of.
Addiction. Right.
But he was saying how strong his urges were that he had to watch one more scene. He had to fast, you know, and do that. So, but I think I think it becomes unhealthy if it's just you. Now, if it's a couple and that's what y'all into, hey, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now if you're married, now the Bible says the bedroom is, the marriage bed is under fire. So you can look here. The Lord has blessed your freakiness. Go for it.
God!
I'm going to leave it right there.
So, again, that clarity here. All right, voyeurism, it is not the disorder. It's the paraphilia, right, which we said is a strong sexual urge, desire, or behavior of an object or person or, right, whatever the identified, right, stimuli is. Got it?
Okay.
So but the voyeuristic disorder kicks in when you have to say to yourself, okay, right? This is becoming too much. It's overwhelming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of my desire, because of this overwhelming urge to see people naked, to see people undressed, to see live.
Okay.
Right. Other people in their sexual acts, I can't go on with my life, right? Does that make sense? So we really have to understand that the disorder kicks in, right? She also says we keep buffering. We kick in.
Refresh your computer.
Kicks in with the disorder when you can identify that, you know, it's just becoming too much,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I asked that question, because we have a lot of labels out here, right? So when you say, okay, you have voyeurism tendency, right? It's like you are sexually aroused by watching an unsuspected person.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, of course, we get into the legal realm of that, but it's like, right, but this turns you on.
Okay.
Right? That's the voyeurism in you. It turns you on. Does not mean you have a full-blown disorder, because you can go right, you can go to work the next day, or you can resume your, you know, relationship and, You know, you don't need that to be sexually aroused in your relationship.
I feel like we need a poll. I just don't know how to word the poll. Maybe, I'm scared to put a poll up because some of y'all may say it all the way. Because we got people watching in the watch party, and then we have people watching on the live stream. So
okay.
So I'm waiting. And please send your questions, those of you in the live stream.
Come on with it.
So y'all can, so she can talk to you all, and I can just push buttons. Spin records.
We can talk. We can have this dialogue.
I'm not on the couch.
You
need somebody over there.
Nobody needs to be on the couch right now.
Well, that's probably a good point.
Right. Okay. So yes, that is voyeurism, is the paraphilia, which is the, you know, a strong sexual desire.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Strong sexual urge.
Okay.
Fantasy.
Okay.
Right. And you know, really, you know, I think about fantasies, and I know I asked that question a while ago, but when you think about that, people can fantasize all day long, right? Just so you think about an urge, right? You can do something to get over an urge. You can go, you know.
See, I'm gonna take that in a different direction.
Okay, come on.
And this is just my thinking, because I know you're talking about sexual fantasy.
Cool.
Some people fantasize about stuff all day long that ain't got nothing to do with that.
Like what?
People fantasize about houses and you know, money.
Is that a fantasy, or is that you're thinking, you are processing, you, because fantasy is just that you're creating.
You ain't got no job and you sitting there. Yeah, they create.
Why are you doing that to people?
I'm just saying, people have all these weird thoughts and desires. You know that all of them are not. So
but do they have biological responses?
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Right. So fantasy spark some flow. Right. Fantasy spark, and you know that could be a sexual arousal. So thinking about, you know, your house. I mean, it depends on, you know, what fetish you have. Right. You still can get sexually aroused.
You put the right meal in front of me. You know it. You know.
You know what? Oh God!
I'm just saying, you put
really?
the right kind of steak and a baked potato. My life might change. I don't know. You know.
Shiante, we gonna get to the things we can treat them. Yeah, we are. We
are these
gonna
things
get
treatable? Let's pray so.
All right, so there we are. We got fantasies going,
okay,
right? So fantasies spark some physical reactions within you, right? And so you know, getting back to that fantasizing, right? You know, some people fantasize all day. You know, you could be at work and your productivity is slowing down because you're fantasizing about, right, your sexual desires or who you want to have sexual encounters with.
Mm. Okay.
Right. And so just thinking about that process, you can see how it could be an interruption to your life. So listen, as I'm talking here, the elements of the disorders have to be consistent for more than 6 months. Right. So we're not talking about something you experienced for about a month or two.
So you need to be, for lack of a better word, suffering for 6 months with these issues.
Oh my God. Yes.
Before you all call it a disorder.
Right.
Oh, that's not a good look, Doc.
Right.
Who came up with that rule? A bunch of y'all sat around the room, some medical professionals, and said, give him
six months.
He didn't hurt.
That, but you know, that's a short time.
But your job.
But doing what?
Because you fantasizing about so-and-so or brother so-and-so, and you missing pushing the wrong buttons in the computer.
But listen, is that realistic? Because people, what do you do when you're fantasizing about somebody you want?
Okay.
If you're sexually attracted to somebody.
Okay.
And you start to have fantasies about your sexual, and why are you closing your eyes?
I just
can see his face right now.
Yeah, that's why I'm so glad you had a camera working on this side.
But just imagine you you see someone you're attracted to physically,
okay,
and you start to fantasize about them sexually.
Okay.
I mean, how do you deal with that and get rid of it?
That's a good question. How do you? Yeah, see, with the question.
I think that you need to go ahead and, you know.
Oh, see? You get a medical advice?
Nope.
Exactly. Did you put your disclaimer out that you are not giving this, that what you're saying today?
Oh, God. No, I say, first of all, you know, you have to have the healthy lifestyle, meaning you have to stay focused. You know, the hardest thing they say is being single these days. Because we think about it, sex is all around us. So I really have compassion for people who are struggling with things like this. So last week we talked about the lack of desire, right?
Mm-hmm.
When there's an issue
mm-hmm.
in you just even having a desire, the issue with your body even being physically prepared to have sex. And this week we're talking about now you just got have some buttons on that just won't go off.
Mm.
You know, and so all around us, you know, sexual, you know, undertones is everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? So that person who is literally struggling, you say, let me go walk it off, you know, let me turn to something else. It's literally everywhere you turn, right? Some of our grocery commercials, right, have sexual, you know, and it's just, it's really a...
Lettuce just ain't lettuce no more.
No, it's very challenging to even control yourself, to even, you know, have those, things in order where you say control your impulses, right?
Y'all pray for Shiante in the IP.
She said, I spent a lot of money on... Okay.
She's fantasizing over a WWE wrestler named Bill Goldberg.
I mean, but look at what they wear.
Oh, okay. I am.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I'm
so, like,
push
I think that it's, we have to talk about, like, it 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, we weren't as revealing as we are now.
This is true.
Right. So, you know, and I look at sexual harassment as a very serious thing to me. But like when you are sexually turned on by someone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
You really have to know how to handle that because like we said, you can get fired, you can catch a case.
Yeah.
Right. So many things can get out of control with your sexual nature when you are sexually aroused.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's like, wow. Right, especially growing teenagers. What do we teach them about sexual control?
Yeah.
Right. We don't even urges, cravings, right, tendencies, behavior. I ain't had none of that growing up.
No.
You know what I'm saying? None of these terms even existed, right? But oh, when you know.
Earlene Wilford in the Watch Party.
Uh huh.
I think it has to do with your mindset. And then she put it here 9 years single.
Okay. All right.
Bless your ministry.
That, hey, bless it. And, hey, you know, I'm feeling all that because it's like, you know, when you make a commitment spiritually, right, that's when it hits the hardest. Hmm? And I'm going to leave that right there. So you have to find things to do with your time, right? But I'm just talking about sexual urges are sexual urges. Fantasies are fantasies, right? But what happens when it's intense, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when your body
mm-hmm.
gets aroused even though you're trying to stop it?
Okay.
Right? What do you do with yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What do you do with yourself? And so just the idea of that where, you know,
we're
talking about, you're not around the shower.
Go to the water, cold water, go to the water fountain. You open up that door. I'm gonna let you have
You know Bill Goldberg?
The wrestler?
Yeah.
Tell him what you're talking about.
Okay.
Why, you need to see a picture?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Nope. What's up, David? the right person up in here now. Lord. So you, here we go. So, man, we talk about sexual urges and fantasies.
Invite him to the show.
Right? You know, and how that works, what you're supposed to do when you get sexually aroused just by seeing people disrobe or you peeking in people's windows. Right now, we talk about voyeurism, right? And just the overall, you get excited watching other people engage in sexual activity. And we're not talking about porn, right? So, you know, looking at friends or, you know, or your partner engaging in other sexual acts while you watch, all right? There's so many questions I want to ask my producer. But he made...
The thing that you would sign right there. The future of the Healthy Soul Talk Radio. That is real good.
He just threatened me, so...
Real good. Oh, Lord.
Your show got canceled because you asked the wrong question.
Here come Lance, tell it.
Here we... Come on in here, Lance. Oh, come on, we're talking
right.
about...
That's how to help
you. Here we go. You ready for the
next one? You already got a church. I'm still trying to get my first one.
Here we go. You ready for the next one? Transvestism. Here we go. Transvestism. Now, let me put this disclaimer out there. We are not talking about the population in any specific community that likes to cross-dress, period.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that,
mm-hmm.
right? So I want to be clear about that. Transvestism... Right, is the paraphilia. It's a form of paraphilia where it involves recurrent or intense sexual arousal from cross-dressing,
mm-hmm.
which may manifest as fantasies, urges, or behaviors. Got it? So that's transvestism, is you have a sexual arousal, a sexual urge, fantasy, or behaviors just from cross-dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Got it? So that's the paraphilia form, right? And so you have where cross-dressers, meaning typically men dressing women's clothing, we know that exists, right? But this here is talking about you get sexually aroused from dressing in women's clothing.
Okay.
You still with me, producer?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm reading the watch party comment. And going from there.
So David says, just go with it. All right, I will. Okay, right. That's what I said. God made us that way. So we just got to control these urges, right, and these fantasies. All right?
Uh-huh.
All right. So we got it. So listen, transvestic disorder. Remember how we said we can have tendencies but not disorders. So the disorder is which you actually have a problem with being sexually aroused. It's too much. It's overwhelming, right? And you cross-dress.
Mm-hmm.
Got it? So cross-dressing, you can't really control when you're doing it because you have the need to be sexually aroused when you cross-dress. So cross-dressing causes sexual arousal, fantasies, and urges. And this must be present for more than 6 months. Or 6 months. 6 months.
Right.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
At 6 months. I said more than when it hits 6 months.
That's okay. That's what is the issue.
Yes. At 6 months.
So if gentlemen, if you put on your wife's undergarments for 4 or 5 months.
Oh my God.
And in the 6 months you stop.
Why he can't buy his own?
Ain't nothing wrong with you.
Why can't he buy his own?
If you do it past them 6 months, something is wrong with you. That's what the doctor just said. I heard her when she said it.
Remember that fact I just said?
Which
high
one?
Heel shoes was initially made for men, right? So now we said if you like putting on high heel shoes, right? That's a form of paraphilia,
okay.
Right?
Right.
And you know.
So, gentlemen, what I heard her say was, if you want to use your wife's or your baby mama's hygiene products for 5 or 6 months, 5 months and 28 days, there's nothing wrong with you. But if you go past day 29 and day 30, something is wrong with you. That's what I heard her say. Huh?
Well, me ask, so looking at where we are today in society,
pause for a second, keep that thought. Do you know what your topic is for next week?
Next week we're coming up to
Are we still going to be in this realm?
No, we're going to talk about the five love languages.
Okay, you should have a guest next week. Pastor Landgate Evans, you are welcome to come to the studio. Let me give you a personal invitation.
Did you just excuse yourself from my show?
No, I'm going to still be sitting here. But see somebody over there to talk to. Go ahead. You were saying?
I don't even know what
I
was
saying. I told you to keep your thought.
Welcome, Lestat. You know I'm up here.
You should have got the Huntons. Invite the Huntons. It's going to be better to beat the Browns if you invite the Huntons.
So do you, our culture is shifting to like gender neutral, right?
Yeah. Whatever.
You know, it's gender neutral concept. And I really think about, you know.
I don't think the culture is shifting, but go ahead.
Part of the culture.
Yeah, I think it's people. But go ahead.
Well, that's the culture, the way people believe and behaviors. Okay. But you know, I thought about this here, and it's like we have these labels here. We talk about cross-dressing, but our clothing is changing, right? They're making more gender neutral clothing, and so cross-dressing, you know, in the DSM-5, we used to say that was a men's issue, right? Men's issue, and so it changed because obviously we see that cross-dressing just doesn't apply to males.
Okay.
Right, so now it includes women, and it's like, okay, so is it fair? How do you know when a person is sexually aroused by wearing the other gender's clothes?
That's your question. How do you
right? And it's like how we conceptualize this, right? Because we're saying that because there was a study done that says cross dressers may cross dress for reasons other than sexual stimulation. For example, to reduce anxiety, to relax, or in the case of male cross-dressers, to experiment with the feminine side of their otherwise male personalities. So
I think you're getting a lot of feedback tonight because the Lord is not
the Lord
He is not pleased with this conversation. But go ahead.
Or it could be the devil. He don't want us to talk about these things so people can recognize some stuff that's going on.
Okay, so you said, what about the men's feminine what?
Cross-dressers may cross-dress for reasons other than sexual stimulation.
Okay, yeah.
For example,
okay,
to reduce anxiety, to relax,
mm-hmm.
or in the case of male cross-dressers, to experiment with the feminine side of their otherwise male personalities.
Mm.
So, right? Do you believe that sometimes men can desire to see what it feels like to be a woman or a feminine?
Not at all. You ought to say it.
Says Mike wears my wigs to relieve his anxiety when I'm not home.
See, I'm done. All right. Told you to have it here on your show. I'm done. No, I don't think that's a. First of all, it's to relieve anxiety. I think women have so many. And this is just me.
Okay.
And please, nobody take this as a male chauvinistic point of view. I'm sure I'm going to get inboxes. If y'all don't inbox me, inbox Dr. Thomas. You can inbox at the Healthy Soul Talk Facebook page. Please inbox Dr. Thomas.
I'm always ready.
I'd like to be so careful with God my words when I'm on here, because then I'll open up the door for some new people in my inbox, and I don't need no new stalkers. Okay? Anyway, I think women have a hard enough time being women. And then to be a man trying to be a woman, I think that would cause more anxiety than it would be stress relief.
So
I'm going that route, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's tough because, you know, I think that there's certain things we just won't understand about all human behavior, right? Because
yes.
Psychology is the study of human behavior,
yes.
Right? So if I have people or let's just say men who say, you know, I'm comfortable in my, the skin that I'm in, which is feminine, right? Meaning mm-hmm. I like dressing like a woman, right? I identify more as a woman.
Okay.
It's no issue, right? It does not matter of fact, if they don't do it, they're more likely to experience anxiety because they are not comfortable, right, in what society says they should be as a male.
They're not comfortable being how they were born.
What? No, dressing like society says men should dress, right?
Like a boy.
Sure. Okay.
You
all right, here
boy.
We go. Here we go.
You don't wear dresses.
Here we go.
I'm sorry.
So, you know, so some things is just a phenomenon sometimes. Like, okay, like you said, how do you feel so comfortable, right? But it's like, but they are comfortable. Right, they're experienced because they're being who they say ultimately they want to feel that feminine, you know, experience, that desire. What you got? What
Earlene Wilfred at the watch party. Hello, Earlene.
Hello, Earlene.
Earlene says, I spoke once to a guy for a week, and he said his fetish was women's stockings
yes.
and pantyhose. That scared me, and I ran.
So we fetish is they are. Intensely sexually aroused with urges, fantasies, and behaviors
okay.
towards objects.
Okay.
Right? So his objects are pantyhose.
Now, is it pantyhose just by themselves?
Yes, he can't even walk in the
or
store.
Or is it pantyhose with somebody in them?
No, we're talking about he will go and buy some pantyhose and engage in self-pleasure activity.
Oh, God, help us today. Okay.
Right, so that's the fetish side. The fetish side, I don't need a person.
Okay.
Just give me those shoes. Just give me those pantyhose. Just, you know, show me a pair of feet.
Okay.
And I'm sexually aroused and I act on that.
Okay.
All right, so transvestic disorder, meaning what? Again, we shifted to where this urge, this craving is interrupting their day-to-day life.
Okay.
Right. So does that make sense? They can't, you know, for all practical purposes, concentrate on what is their normal life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this particular aspect, which is cross-dressing, sexual arousal with cross-dressing, let's make sure we connect those two. Sexual arousal, urges, fantasies from cross-dressing is too much.
Mm.
Got it?
Yeah, I got some.
All right. Let's move on.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about sexual sadism.
Sexual sadism.
Yes.
Okay.
Here we go.
Not Satanism.
Sadism.
But sadism.
Sadism. However way you want to say it.
Sadistic tendencies.
Sadistic tendencies.
Got it.
Here we go. It is an infliction of physical or psychological suffering on another person to stimulate sexual excitement or orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
Let me repeat that. Sexual sadism is infliction of physical or psychological suffering,
mm-hmm.
such as humiliation or terror,
mm-hmm.
on another person to stimulate excitement or orgasm. Okay?
Sadism.
Yes. Sexual, sir. Okay? Sexual. All right? And so, again, must be present for about 6 months. It's a form of paraphilia, but it's considered mild sadistic sexual behavior, right? And it's common sexual practice between consenting adults, usually limited in scope, and is not harmful and does not meet the criteria for a paraphilic disorder. That's the sexual sadistic things, right?
So, okay.
So we talk about, you know, where you are doing such things like bondage, right? Mild spanking.
Okay.
You know, you're mutually compatible. So you often seek out partners who like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
You know, you may tie them up with some handkerchiefs.
S&M is what we're talking about. No, that's not what we're talking about.
What? That's what you're talking about, ain't it? No.
You talk about masochism?
Uh-huh. Ain't that what that's...
We get to that next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is the mild form.
My bad.
Mild. I said mild tendency.
I skipped ahead. I'm sorry. At least slow down. Come on back this way.
You done went all ahead to the next.
You need some help in here.
Hey, are you over there sweating?
These 70s people gonna be pulling me to the ground. Y'all hear Rapper? Rapper was on there with that woman. They're talking nasty. I can see it now. I already see three or four of them on here.
Oh,
my
God.
Get the Bible video. I'm looking at me funny. Go ahead.
So sometimes, right, when you talk about this, you know, and I pause here because it's like, what's too much? When you talk about spontaneous sexual interactions or role playing or, you know, pain, you know, and I'm not talking about, of course, you end up in a hospital, right? But, you know, some cultures may look at that as, oh, that's not what the design of sex is. But then there are some cultures who say, yes, wear the whip, wear the chain, you know, wear the leather, all this kind of stuff, wear spikes. All of that to enhance, right, this particular paraphilia because it's a sexual arousal, right? So how some cultures shame it, some cultures embrace it.
So you added or they added, whoever came up with these terms, they added spontaneity to that?
No, what I mean in terms of like when you, so people say being creative, right? And
okay.
I think for the sake of, you know, when I have married couples who say they're tired of the same old,
right?
Right, and they're like, okay, we need to do something different,
right?
Right, so it's like, what's what we're gonna do different?
Okay,
right. So now we get into this side, right?
Okay,
where we're role playing, you know, now we're bringing in, you know, objects to get sexually aroused.
Okay,
well, one culture say, you know, that's not the design of it, right?
Okay.
Other cultures are like, no, what's wrong with a little, you know, handcuff?
Okay.
Right? Because we have this label here, and I don't even know why it's called sadism, right?
Yeah, that's why you... That's
sadistic,
why.
Sexual sadistic things.
Interesting. So
okay.
Handcuffs would be considered some form of...
Bondage.
But sadism.
Yes, sadistic. Yes. Right. So again, this is with like the DSM-5, right? This is just kind of how we use it. It was here before I became a clinician.
Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of evolved from that. Now that's the tendencies, right? These
uh-huh.
are tendencies.
Okay.
The disorder comes when, you know, you overboard with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Patients have been repeatedly and intensely aroused by the physical or psychological. So in other words, you can't enjoy sex without.
Okay.
Right?
You can't,
so that's the disorder part of like you can't even get aroused unless you are inflicting, right, some
mm-hmm.
type of suffering or appear to be suffering
okay.
with your partner.
Okay.
Right? So you can imagine, right, what that you know, looks like with that. So that's kind of where we're tipping into the disorder where, again, the condition needs to be there for about 6 months. And so... You know, this is really hard when you talk about diagnosing people. Who's going to sit and, you know, confess any of these paraphilias that's interrupting their life?
If you want to call into the show, the call-in number is 323. Let me put this out. 323. Because I just get the feeling somebody wants to talk.
Somebody wants to share.
870-4375 is the call-in number. You can call in anonymously and just, you ain't got to say your name or nothing, and go ahead and let, you know. No, in the words of the good prophetess, Missy Elliott, get
the
freedom.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
But 323-870, let me drop this in the watch party.
323-870-4375
is the call-in.
Okay. That's it. Press 1. Right,
you
press 1.
When you call in, let me know that you actually
press
want to,
one.
That you actually want to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't press 1, then you're just going to be sitting there listening. So,
yeah.
Y'all go ahead and
so yeah, Chiante, BDSM, right? We got that, you know, some roles coming in, the bratty little role, all that stuff. Why are we tired? See, our listeners can relate now.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, listeners. They are listeners. Well, wait a minute.
You just disassociate.
My listeners are saints. Jesus. These be your listeners. That's what this is.
But listen, let me tell you this. And this is where, you know, I get serious for a moment. I have young people who engage in these behaviors from the onset of their sexual experience. And now they're, you know, late 20s, late 20s, 30s, and they are now desiring to have sexual fulfillment, right? You know, and it is what it is, right? They're sexually active. So it's like they are, for all practical purposes, heartbroken because now they're with one person, not doing any of these elements anymore, and they feel nothing, right? So when you think about these things, it's like when you start and you engage from the onset in these behaviors, and now you say, I'm ready to settle down, I'm ready to not do all that stuff. I've heard people say, I done it all.
Okay.
Right? And it's like, you, obviously, I ask those questions, and they have done a whole lot, right, as it relates to these elements here for what sexually aroused them. And so when you say, well, how does this evolve? Part of this goes with your intro to sexual experiences.
Okay.
So if you're with someone who introduces you at the onset to this level, right, and your body responds to it, you have to maintain that. Does that make sense? So really thinking about, you know, somebody posted earlier, freaky, right? Mm-hmm. That's the term we often use is freaky.
Right.
But that's your body's first introduction to sex, right? It's the quote unquote freaking.
Freaky is not a clinical term. Really.
It's not a clinical term, but that's the cleanest way, right? We can describe, right?
Okay.
Because, you know, now it's like, okay, well, that's played out to me, right? Or it doesn't work anymore. But it's like now your body's not responding to, you know, milder forms of sexual desire or initiations. So, you know, that's really, you know, that's harmful because now they go from relationship to relationship. I often see that in promiscuity, right? Like, you know, promiscuous people literally searching for that gratification, not having to do all of this stuff we're talking about for this.
Okay. I just find it interesting that that's still under the sadism part. It's just, I don't know. I guess I never thought of it. I guess
it's because they use the word sadism. Sadism?
Sadism, yeah.
When you think of like
sadism, you think
like the devil?
You think torture-ish.
Let's move on to the next one, shall we?
Okay.
All right. Sexual, right? Masochism.
Okay.
Right? So sexual masochism, right? Masochism is a form of paraphilia. But most people who have masochistic interests do not meet the criteria, right, for the disorder. This person is intentional participation in an activity that involves being humiliated, beaten, bound, or otherwise abused to experience sexual excitement.
Okay.
Right? Sexual masochism disorder is a sexual masochism that causes significant distress or significantly impairs function. So we have, right, you have to be, you must be humiliated, beaten, bound, or otherwise abused to experience sexual excitement. And so, masochistic activities may be the preferred or exclusive mode of producing sexual excitement. Right? So it's the only way you're going to get aroused. And so there are many fantasies that they're saying that most people only get sexual aroused when it's done to them.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So we're not just talking about the person who's actually doing it. This is more kind of talking about the person where it has to be done to them. And so listen to this. This is some things where they say here are some fantasies that goes with sexual masochism. You ready?
I'm listening.
Of course, we have binding them, right? And we're talking about to the point where it's tight, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're bound
mm-hmm.
really tight, right? So that they feel some level of pain. We have piercing of the skin,
mm-hmm.
applying electrical shocks, burning themselves, right? Being whipped.
Mm-hmm.
So not just having the whip there, but you're actually being whipped. And part of a simulated rape, being urinated on, being spanked, or blindfolded.
Okay.
She also says that's the other persuasion, though, right? Hey, you know what? I've been doing this for a long time, and I must say, initially, I thought when I entered the field that it was more dominant in other cultures, but, you know, we kind of ranking, we about almost even with some of this stuff.
I just felt that my mind telling me no.
I'm sorry, y'all.
Felt that.
Oh my goodness, you are crazy.
I felt a 12 play spirit just take over the room. I don't understand it. This don't make sense. Oh, Lord, I'm glad this over with me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm gonna get some oil and sanctify the room again.
Hey, you know, so this is listen. So those of you who still listen, what's too far in sexual? How can we say?
Yeah, come on, I'm making the poll question.
Sexual request. What's too much? What's asking too much in sexual encounter?
I can't really put it because then I gotta get answers, and then that's gonna be
yeah, right. So it's like you know, what are you not down for?
Oh.
In sexual encounter.
Okay. Wow.
Excuse me. Can I ask you engage in this dialogue?
I'm engaged. I'm here. What? Did you ask these questions?
Oh my goodness. Yes I did.
No, that don't work. This ain't how that works. this is not how the show goes. I'm sorry, what was the question? Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
What's too much? You don't even have to be specific. But
right.
More like, you know, what would say okay, some because men we have both sides, right? So you can be engaged in this level as the requester receive it.
So it's the question is, when is a request too much?
Yeah, what request?
When
does
the request go too far?
Yeah, when is the request going too far? When does the request go too far?
That's a good one.
Right?
Yeah,
when does the request
go
too far?
I think if it's outside of your, again, I think some of this has to do with, this goes back to those conversations we had last week.
Yeah.
About having the conversation early on about likes and dislikes.
Okay.
So this goes back to that. If you have never had a conversation about what you like and what you don't like, then this level that you're speaking on is going to be non-existent or it's going to be an immediate no.
Right.
So if you have led up to some things and you've had these conversations and you know, you kind of get an inkling that this is what this person may require or they've hinted, the best thing for you to do, this is me, and again, this is a non-professional opinion, would be to say, hey, you know, when this was going on, I noticed you were liking this and liking this. Is that something you're interested in? See how I did that smooth like that? Boy, I tell you.
Listen, everything doesn't quite work that smooth, right? And then I'll give you an example. So, I was with this gentleman, and was with him for a few years.
Uh-huh.
And he would hit me on my backside.
Uh-huh.
And, it got harder.
Oh, okay.
And I'm talking about, we could be walking down the street. I'm not talking about sexual.
Oh, he said that was just something that he'd like to do.
I should have put that out. Right.
Yeah, because you definitely.
I was not going there. Let me clear that up.
I thought you was just, you know, I was going to turn off. Is that my confession?
No.
Huh?
But I found that, like, he really got excited when he would do that. Like, I turned around one day and I was like, you know, I wanted to curse because it just, I was like, what is going on? So I said that to say, like, you know, I think sometimes things evolve over time.
Okay.
Right. And if it's something like this is stuff that you keep under wraps, right? Because as you just said, if I let all of this out, you're not going to stay with me, right? And
okay.
So it didn't last because other stuff began to be introduced.
Ah.
Right? So you know, I can tell you that was one of my experiences where I was like, okay, hold on, right? No, this right here, it does not feel good to me. Although you get aroused or you get, you know, some type of pleasure
from it.
Correct.
Not.
Correct.
Right.
Right, and there was no compromise, right? So I think we just hit a point where it was like, okay, well, this, you know, this me. I said, this me, right? And so there you have it. So it really, you know, sometimes it can catch you off guard with that. And how do you, right? If you say, hey, we need to be more creative, right? What does creative mean?
Okay.
Right? Should creativeness involve pain, pleasure? But we're saying here, what if you have someone where this is the only way they get sexually aroused?
Ah, okay. He needs some help.
Or she. Right? Because now you have where, and it's, you know, just thinking about that, you with someone and you save yourself, right? You hold off on sex, right? And now you here you are. And you married, and now here we go. What would you do? We waited.
Oh.
Right, we waited.
But see, then that's when that discussion should have been had. That discussion should have been had.
Okay.
Because if you're not virgins.
She had to get
that.
Hey, we getting in a little bit.
Hey. I'm saying if that those conversations had to have been had on some level.
Okay.
Nobody marries anybody and not know what kind of freak or lack thereof that they married. That's just real talk. And as a
do you want to talk about that in premarital?
And as a preacher who has done premarital counseling and post marital counseling, yes, I think that because that is we've had some of those conversations similar to the ones you talk about where the guy says, you know, we're not doing it enough, or even the woman might say, you know, we're not doing it enough, or he's overly aggressive,
right?
You know, those types of conversations. So yeah, those are conversations that you should have had prior to,
right?
Because I have counseled couples who have said to me, who were dishonest with me during the premarital counseling. Because y'all told me that, you know, oh no, we good, we not, you know, whatever. And then once y'all married and y'all start, you know what, you know, y'all start legally doing it, spiritually doing it legally, if you put it that way, with a spiritual covering. Now all of a sudden, oh no, he wants to do this, and he wants to do that, he wants to do this, and also is this new? Well, no, because when we were doing it before we got there, oh wait a minute, see you didn't, no, you should have been asking those questions. You should have been asking those questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that you know this topic is relevant because some people are shamed, right?
Yeah.
And it hurts relationships when you say, well, my sex drive or what turns me on, what excites me doesn't equal out or is not in even the playing field, right, of my partner, right? And now something's wrong with me, right? And so remember, we talked about paraphilia. It's just a label, right? It's sexually what turns you on, what satisfies you, what fantasies, right, you put out there. And so it's like, wow, you know, what happens when you have a mismatch like that, right? Mm-hmm. What happens when you know, you have one person more experienced.
Right.
Right? Than the other person, but then we have in some of our culture where certain acts, certain, you know, introductions, certain, you know, even to the extent of role play is like shunned upon.
Right.
Right. And I don't really know where that came from. You know, I don't really know where, you know, it got so intense where, you know, some women are uncomfortable, right, in their sexual experiences because they've been basically said, hey, this is not how ladies engage in sexual relationships.
Okay.
Right? So how do you think we can begin to kind of break that, you know, break that where women are not ashamed, right, to explore based on what some of us or our culture has said is not ladylike?
Yeah, because that's the that was their upbringing. That was
right.
That was how they were that was how they were raised.
Right.
To say that this is not, you know, we don't do that.
Right.
That's for the other people.
Correct. We were separate with that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you know, I never, you know, maybe that's moving forward. It's still not really clear on what the church body says about appropriate or healthy sexual relationships. Right, and I think this is where the fuzziness, because I want to be clear on what deems a disorder versus, you know, what turns you on sexually or fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need to stress out over something that ultimately what we say is human nature.
Okay.
Right, you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. These are some things that turn people on sexually, right? But we need to address cultural issues.
Yes.
Which includes the church, because the church has kind of created this isolated sense of what good sex is.
And there are some of my mentors, those who do churches, I think, won't talk about it openly.
Correct.
But those churches that do real marriage retreats,
okay,
I believe they do.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like
okay.
And something you could probably do would be is to get a married couple. A Christian couple, a pastor and his wife maybe, who done those ministries. Pastor Reggie Royal and London Royal Lifeline. They always have marriage retreats, and they always they go that far. And they,
okay.
But
very
again,
good.
They talk about that the sex and the covenant relationship with your spouse. And I've seen those them and others. Have those
Chielsa is on the road tonight, right?
And on that note.
Right. You put it out there. You said the bed was under fire. All right, so her next husband better bring it. Let me go ahead and put my thumbs up right there.
Okay.
Well, but you know, I think so I appreciate that. But you know, I think because a part of now we have to put in perspective what is healthy sexuality, what is healthy, you know, when is it appropriate to talk about it as singles in terms of what are we waiting for? Right. What are we waiting for? And how do you sustain yourself where, you know, all this stuff is put into the atmosphere, right, about what to expect. Does that make sense? What to expect?
Yeah.
So, it's quite interesting to me. Right. So I really want to talk about, you know, those specific disorders that kind of focus more on dealing with adults. This last one here. Obviously, I take very serious because our jails are filled with individuals who engage in pedophilia. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, when they hear about pedophiles, as they used to term it, they say, well, how could you right? How can you do that, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get turned on, right, by children? And so obviously on my side in the clinical profession, we study just such. It's called pedophilia,
mm-hmm.
right, which is recurrent or intense sexually arousing fantasies, urges, or behaviors involving prepubescent or young adolescents, usually under age 13.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes 5-year-olds and younger, older than the child who is the target of the fantasy or behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is diagnosed only when people are over 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so just the whole concept where you say there are people out there who are sexually aroused,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Just with the sight of children.
Yeah, yeah.
And they act on it.
Yeah.
Right? And so obviously these are minors, non-consenting people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you think about when we say rehabilitation,
mm-hmm.
it's very hard. You know, she asked about treatment earlier. Those other things we can deal with, the anxiety or, you know, the physical signs of distress that comes with
mm-hmm.
Those disorders, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you your blood pressure rises? There's just certain medications
mm-hmm.
for that. But when it comes to you being aroused by children,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is illegal, right? Obviously, this is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at pedophilia, you know, it's when it's a long-term treatment of psychotherapy and drugs that alter the sex drive to reduce testosterone levels.
Ah, okay.
Right? But when you think about that, it's like, how successful is that? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously there are some countries who do some more, you know, harsher. Right?
Yes.
Harsher.
I agree.
Damages
that.
With that.
I agree.
But know that it's real, right? Know that there are... unfortunately, the higher population or the higher gender in these offenses is men,
mm-hmm.
are men. And so understanding that they act on these impulses,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, you know, that's a tough one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one to
yeah.
say, do we really accept that from a physical biological arousing sexual standpoint, arousal standpoint, that someone actually gets sexually aroused, right,
mm-hmm.
with the thought of looking at children, right? And some of the telltale signs, as we said, you know, looking at kiddie porn, as they said, child pornography,
right?
They are preoccupied, right, with children and just, you know, how they're dressed. Right, even to the
mm-hmm.
the fantasies of pictures and things of that nature. And so, you know, some things we miss because we say, you know, by 16, we can begin to see these signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
countless times just being in this field where, you know, I just have a heart matter that I constantly have to deplete myself when working with sexual trauma survivors where they're describing their offenders have been cousins, right? Their offenders have been, you know, not necessarily grown adult men,
mm-hmm.
but they were 5, right? And the offender was 14, right? They
mm-hmm.
were 16, they were 18, and some of this lasted for years,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, even to, you know, closer relatives to that. So it really, when you think about that, I was, you know, discussing some things with another clinician and we were just talking about how that's the biggest hidden secret
mm-hmm.
in a family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It is the
mm-hmm.
sexual trauma, right? Where, and it is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're 16, 17, right? And they're sexually turned on by a child, right? It is what it is. That's pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but we that it's More of this has been discussed in families that we know, but it was said to forget about.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. It was said to, okay, you know, don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? This person went on to assault other people. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is where you say, well, how did they go to jail? Well, it's not by the time they get to jail, that the one that they got arrested for, rest assured, it's highly likely that that was their first offense.
Yes.
Right? It's highly unlikely that that was their first offense. And so, yes, there is a such thing in the DSM-5 dealing with, you know, pedophilia. And that whole aspect of, you know, you being attracted to children. And, you know, when you get older, you still seek underage children,
mm-hmm.
right? So it doesn't even, you know, once your victim gets of age, right, particularly after they go through puberty, you're no longer attracted to them.
Yes.
Right, and so now you find some other child to prey on, right? And so the cycle continues. So you know, I fully support those clinicians who work in the clinical setting, trying to rehabilitate and you know, keep our community safe. You know, but the sex registry, you know, I agree with it, but it does not necessarily mean that they won't offend again.
True.
Right?
Yeah,
Because this is a long-term therapeutic. Basically, they need to be in therapy for the rest of their life. And I'm not saying that to be funny or you know, sarcastic, but with this particular pedophilia,
mm-hmm.
right, with this particular paraphilia, long-term therapy is a must.
Right,
because we're dealing with sexual urges.
Right, I haven't done any research to know. What is the recovery process?
So.
Or is it just like you said? Is it just long term?
So right now, some of the facts about sex offender programs. It's a 52-week program. Minimum.
Wow.
Right?
52 weeks.
So that's a year. But and rightfully so, right? You think about the rehabilitation, but I don't think it should end there. I think because, you know, usually it's under legal consequence.
Yes.
Right? And so like I said, there's a special training, it's a whole world in itself to be trained to work with sex offenders.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But just thinking about that, the accountability has to be so tight. Right?
Yes.
Because kids are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When we talked about those other things, that really is a created environment.
Yes.
Right? That's a created environment. But we're talking about someone who is sexually attracted, has fantasies, has urges for children, and children are everywhere. So how do you not have, right, a long-term a recovery approach to this? But again, you know, the law says they serve their time, they've done what they're supposed to do, you register as a sex offender, you know, it's really, that's all you can do, right? And hopefully they, you know, I'm a clinician, right? So
right.
I would hope that, you know, I wouldn't want them to live in agony, because agony, we know eventually you may give in to the temptation.
Okay.
Right? But you know, you can't stay in the house forever. Right? So why not offer this long-term therapeutic approach? And yes, Yonce, I you don't have to apologize. You know, it's tough. It's a tough one, right?
Yeah.
It's really a tough one. But because we know that there are people on this earth who deal with this, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we help them?
Yeah, I don't.
You know what I'm saying?
My level of empathy and or sympathy kind of goes out the door.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And that's just something that that's something me and God have to deal with at some point. I have no empathy, because empathy would mean I understand and I don't. Sympathy means I feel sorry for and I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no, I lack in both of those areas when it comes to pedophiles. But I feel the same way about rapists too, so did you touch on that one?
Well, that was with the...
That was with the other one.
Right, but more of the simulate. Right?
Right.
So we're dealing with, you know, that's a whole... We're going to talk
because
about...
that's a whole other...
Antisocial personality disorder.
That's
another cluster that we'll get into later on in the year. But, you know, really thinking about that, it takes all type of people to make the world go round, right? And so we must live among people who battle with these, you know, what I call demons.
That's exactly what they are.
Right? And so it's a beast, right? It's a monster. Right, to have to deal with that. So, you know, my compassion is for the victims, right? We don't want any more victims.
That's it.
So how do you zone in on making sure these people, these individuals with these urges are held accountable for the rest of their life on earth?
I guess, again,
you know,
that's why I asked how long are the treatments? And you said 52-week process.
Generally, yeah.
I think that's great. Again, my fear is, you know, maybe I've watched one too many episodes of Law and Order SVU. And so, you know, my feeling is that, you know, just lock them away somewhere. And I know that's not always the best answer.
But it's the safe answer, right?
Yeah.
It's the one that says, for now we know no more victims. Right, because the victims you preyed on are nowhere near, right, the institution.
Right, right.
Exactly. So yeah. But you know, we have to talk about it in our families.
Yes.
Right.
That's
we have to ask those questions.
I completely agree with you on that. Yeah.
Right. So our we have more young ladies, and I've had my share of, you know, guys too who said I was molested. Right. Such as, you know, Shiante just disclosed, you know, about her nephew, right? It's just one of those things where so common, right? So common in our culture. And we have, again, when you think
Zachary,
about...
Zachary said the same thing. Remember Zachary, when we had Zachary on, he was talking about his book, Victim of Circumstance.
Right.
It was a family member. It's always, it's never some, you know, in most cases, and I could be wrong, it's never just some stranger.
Right.
It's always somebody either related to or like a family member.
Right. Even today, I've heard camp counselors.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just, and when you say we trusted this person.
Right.
Right. We trusted this person.
Right.
So a lot of this is repeated cycles. Right. So yes, there are cases where those pedophiles or pedophilias, their agencies were brought about because they were once abused themselves.
Yes.
Right. And so again, we talk about your first introduction, your first sexual experience came when someone violated you.
Right.
Right. So now the lens you have on is this is what turns me on.
And it can go from, even if it wasn't a even if, you know, you could be, you're not of age for consent.
Correct.
So anytime there is a sexual encounter. And it'll be no different with a young man or young boy, rather, you know, and he's with some 18 or 19 year old girl, and he's 10 or 11 years old, and she awakens something in him, or vice versa, and now that kid may not go on to want to molest people, but now he has these urges all the time because of something that happened to him as a child. So I completely can understand why that. Yeah, as when anytime that when you're not able to legally consent, and I know that
understand what's going on,
you're thinking this is normal.
Absolutely.
So you're thinking
right.
it's normal to
right.
do these things. So I have no empathy for this or the violator.
Right, and it's different, right? My end is different because, you know, those people
they need help.
They need help.
Absolutely.
And you know, everybody hasn't been caught. You know what I'm saying? And so, Felicia said, I'm having a problem with the fact that most attention is paid to the offender than the victim. It's a lifetime of emotional turmoil. It affects your whole life.
Absolutely. Yes.
And Felicia, we were talking about pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those sexual urges as part of paraphilic disorder. So that's why we were focused on that. And maybe you're talking about, you know, society as well, where a lot of attention is given there. And, you know, there are a lot of offenders who are still, you know, out there that need help, right?
Right.
It's just
right.
They haven't been brought up any charges or been reported. And you know, this is how the cycle continues,
mm-hmm.
right? The cycle continues with, in our families right now, there are children being molested. There are children, right, being sexually assaulted that's going into teenage, right? Teenagers who then will look back and continue that cycle on younger cousins, younger siblings, right? And so that's pretty much how that cycle keeps repeating itself.
Right.
Right? There's a conversation we must open up. And, you know, I understand punitive, but, you know, if we don't get a hold of what's appropriate action, right,
mm-hmm.
among children, something we never talked about or minimally talked about in our culture is, how should we act with one another, right? You know, we got all this touching going on. Nobody's saying anything about, you know, hey, that's not appropriate, you know, to be acting like that or
right.
even intervening,
right?
Or setting up boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So I think we can do a better job, you know, of making sure that we're opening up this discussion in our families and teaching our kids,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? Really teaching our kids how to act around each other.
Absolutely.
Even at school. Right, so
yeah.
so there's a lot of touching going on at school.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And so again,
it's
you know, we have especially you know our kids, some of our kids in DCFS custody. Right, they bounce from place to place because they've been sexually violated, and now they sexually violate other children. Right, in the homes that they're placed with, it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Right, it's a vicious cycle. So Felicia says, how do you get people to understand? Though I broke my neck because my sister left my niece with her father who molested me, right? I don't know how to explain it to her because it's her dad. And I've heard this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough one, right? Because I've seen mothers take up for stepfathers and fathers and brothers, their brothers. How do you get that person to understand,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
The magnitude of what's being done, right? The
yeah.
magnitude. It's tough. All right. So, yes, tonight was all about, right, let's put in perspective urges, fantasies, when it gets out of control, when to seek help is when it interrupts your life, meaning that you must fulfill the urge or you do certain behaviors. To the extent where it interrupts how you work, how you engage with your family, and or you can't be sexually aroused other than any of those elements that we talked about. That's when to reach out and get help. A medication is available to work with the symptoms such as anxiety or the impulse control, as we talked about with the pedophilia and medications to reduce testosterone levels again. Don't know how much research is out there that really or how effective that is, but you can imagine that this is a long-term therapeutic process.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much where we go from here. So I think we talked about enough, right? And I thank my producer for sticking in there with me for these last couple of weeks. Woohoo!
Yeah.
You made it through.
Sure did.
All right. But, you know, it's something we don't really talk about, right? And I want us to be comfortable with talking about this kind of stuff, right? Because there are other people really talking about it, right? And
yeah.
there are some kids
yeah.
who are very much aware of, you know, what's appropriate behavior, what's not, right? And what is sex and what that looks like, right?
Right.
So
right.
opening up those lines of communication could better prep us too. All right, so next week we prepping with the five love languages, right? And so, you know, come with the how you like to be loved.
You bring guests next week, right?
I'm trying to find a couple.
You should.
I have been for the past 3 weeks,
okay,
right?
Yeah,
so I'm trying to find
fine.
A couple, right?
You should like put something out on the book and say, hey, you know, if you want to come on and you and your spouse want to come on and talk about love languages, I think, you know,
oh my goodness.
That'd be a good move for you. That way I can just sit over here and spin records.
No, no, I'm going to be over there. You're going to be over here.
Oh, I mean, no. I'm good.
All right, great people. It's been a blast. I hope I helped enlighten you in some way, even if it's to spark conversation, right, with your loved ones and understanding. You know, it's a lot to human behavior. All right? So on that note, I want you to have a great evening. If you want to connect with me, you can at Healthy Soul Talk in the message box. I'll make sure to give you a number to call me at. So have a great week. We out.
You like your new clothes out here?
See, y'all don't know what I go through.
Is the passion?